Ed, you were talking about a cancer researcher who died in a mysterious accident, and also who actually was murdered, though she was finished off in terms of murder, and also a violent political extremist. I think we might want to name these two protagonists at this point.
Okay. The cancer researcher was Dr. Mary Sherman. She was a professor at Tulane Medical School. She ran a cancer laboratory at the Ochsner Clinic. She was a graduate of the University of Chicago Medical School. She was an orthopedic surgeon by training, and she held one of the most prestigious positions in orthopedic surgery in the country. That is, that she was the chairman or chairperson of the pathology committee of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, which is their elite professional organization. David Ferry, by contrast, is someone who lived on the fringes of society. He had been an airline pilot during his respectable days. He lost his job in that through some decency charges due to some relationships he had with underage boys. And his life sort of fell into a spiral, and he started working for the CIA, training pilots for the Bay of Pigs invasions, flying covert missions, flying mafia boss Carlos Marcello around, doing private investigation work for Carlos Marcello and for Guy Bannister, and eventually became one of the suspects in the assassination of President Kennedy, according to the investigation conducted in New Orleans by New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison. Those are the main players in the book, but actually, the real main player in the book is Dr. Alton Ochsner, who was Mary Sherman's boss, because he is the one that was cleared for all the secret government experiments and had been working for the U.S. military on medical-related matters all the way back to the 1940s and had received numerous citations from that. So kind of the key points of my book are, one, we discovered that there was a secret U.S. government laboratory in New Orleans, and that laboratory was on U.S. government property. It was using a radioactive device known as a linear particle accelerator, which accelerates subatomic particles and shoots them into whatever object they choose to. That this research traced back to earlier events involving the contamination of the polio vaccine with a cancer-causing virus, which I personally believe today is related to the current epidemic of soft tissue cancers that we're experiencing, that the objective of that laboratory was a desperate attempt to develop a vaccine to prevent the current epidemic of cancer, and the technique they used there was irradiating monkey viruses for that. In 1964, Mary Sherman died a bizarre and terrible death, and that laboratory, I believe, was shut down at that point, and I think it's very interesting that I hear dates like 1965 from Dr. Horowitz, because that is exactly when I think this research that they were doing in this underground medical laboratory was turned over to the biowarfare researchers for them to continue. The real tragedy of this thing is that when that occurred, there were several thousand mice that were involved in this laboratory in New Orleans, and those mice were turned over and left in the hands of David Ferry, who is a man with a very unstable mental profile, with a long history of violent political activities, particularly towards targets in the Caribbean, such as Cuba and Haiti.
By the way, Ed, two things we might want to mention. One is what they were doing with those mice, and also you mentioned the name Guy Bannister, which is central, I think, to the political milieu that we're talking about.
Well, New Orleans is the northern part of the Caribbean, and it's a critical city in terms of both intelligence operations and military strategy and political resources in the United States, and was the center of a lot of anti-communist activity towards both Cuba and other countries in Central and Latin America. And Guy Bannister was a former FBI, not just an FBI agent, but he was actually the head of the FBI office in Chicago, and he moved down to New Orleans to become a private investigator, though he was the number three man over at the police department for a couple years until he got canned from that. And Guy Bannister is very involved in Garrison's investigation into the assassination of Kennedy, and many, many people have given very reliable testimony that he was personally associated with Lee Harvey Oswald, as was David Ferry. And the activities that were going on in New Orleans had much to do with the covert war against Cuba and many of these off-the-books operations and many blind bank accounts which were going on. And again, this thing with MacArthur in 1970, I think it's very interesting that they put a date so that they can say, no, we weren't doing this before this. And I think there was 10 years of activity on this project prior to 1970.
The point I wanted to emphasize, Ed, is that in the person of Guy Bannister, an individual who you speculate in your book may have been the person under the auspices of whom this laboratory may have been run, appears to have been functioning as a cutout for the intelligence community. So again, we're back to the national security establishment looming in the background here. Len Horowitz talked about a number of institutions overlapping national security, figuring in the background again of vaccines, viral vaccine contaminants, and disease caused by them, either intentional or otherwise. And for those who may have sat back in the late 1980s and said of Dr. Alan Cantwell and the other publishing pioneers in this field, well, they're full of beans, show me the connections there, who would do that, why, and how. I think the contexts in which both you and Len Horowitz have presented your information, as well as Alan Cantwell, certainly set the stage for asking and answering these questions. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, thanks for those comments. A point that comes to mind, I'm sure all three of us are familiar with a book written by Mirko Grimek in France called The Origin of AIDS, where he goes through a lot of AIDS theories, and he, kind of throws this one on the sofa and that one out the window as he goes through. But there's one theory which is proposed to him about radiation mutating monkey viruses in Africa, and this theory proposes that it's a fallout from French nuclear test. And Grimek snarfs at this theory and says, well, without somebody giving us more specific information about precisely this and precisely that, it's difficult to take this theory seriously. And the point I want to make is, on 210 State Street in New Orleans, at the U.S. Public Health Service Hospital, there was a linear particle accelerator emitting radiation targeted at monkey viruses. Okay, is that specific enough?
Yeah, you know what else, Ed? There's one little point that I dug up, that Luc Montagnier, the discoverer of the AIDS virus along with Dr. Gallo, was France's director of nuclear medicine during the 1960s. And what specifically he was doing was exactly what you're saying. What happened in New Orleans, what he was doing was the same thing in France. He was bombarding monkey viruses and various different viruses and tissues with radiation to mutate the viruses, mutate the tissues, and then he studied the external membrane characteristics of the viruses to determine what kinds of mutations were necessary to get these to cause cancers in humans and other animals.
By way of setting the context, too, Ed, down in New Orleans, Alton Oxner, as a political and medical animal, Mary Sherman, Inca, and Lee Harvey Oswald, all of it, in 25 words or less.
It was Dr. Oshner's job to portray Lee Harvey Oswald as a communist in the press prior to the assassination. How many was that?
Well, that's a nice start. Of course, I was being facetious. But again, by way of setting the context in which this research, because again, we've got Mary Sherman, one of the foremost cancer researchers in the country, working with a milieu which appears to have been involved in the assassination of President Kennedy, but which also involves a very important, though generally not recognized individual, Dr. Alton Oxner or Oshner, who is not only a very important political animal, but a very important medical animal and a person with more connections than a switchboard, a lot of those to the national security establishment.
Well, let me just say a couple of things about Oshner, just to kind of tune everybody into him. remember Cordell Hull? He was U.S. Secretary of State during World War II under FDR. Well, he picked up the telephone and personally called Alton Ochsner to get him to get on a plane and fly to Panama to take care of the dictator of Panama, who was about dead, because we owed that dictator a favor for helping us throw the Nazis out of the country so that the Germans couldn't get a hold of the Panama Canal. All right? Point one?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Point two, Richard Nixon. You remember the war on cancer and stuff? He comes to New Orleans in the 1960s after losing the California gubernatorial race. And who does he have lunch with? He has lunch with Alton Ochsner. Okay, when Alton Ochsner's wife is having problems with her passport and the State Department won't obey what they're being told in order to fix her passport in time for her to go to the Greek Isles, she calls the White House and asks to speak to Dick. Okay? These people are as wired into the power establishment as anybody could possibly be. When Alton Ochsner wants to build his new hospital, he needs a lot of money for seed money. He needs a lot of money to build the hospital. Who gives him it, what was then $750,000, but what would be today about $7.5 million, but Clint Murchison? That's the seed money he uses, and where does he get the rest of the money to build his hospital? The United States government gives it to him. Meanwhile, he's working in a sensitive position for the United States government on undisclosed things. Undisclosed, that is, he previously worked for the War Department, for the Navy, for the Air Force, for the Army, and for the FBI. Now he's working on an undisclosed assignment.
By the way, Clint Murchison's name also crops up frequently in the context of the investigation into President Kennedy's assassination. Go ahead, Ed.
Yeah, and it should. At any rate, Ochsner is an incredibly powerful medical figure. He really is one of the people that helped shape American medicine today. If you're not familiar with the Ochsner Clinic in New Orleans, about the size of the Mayo Clinic up in Minnesota. And his role in founding this organization called INCA is really interesting, because this is an anti-communist propaganda mill, basically. And when Lee Harvey Oswald comes to New Orleans, there's a number of media events that occur. One is a TV station sends a camera crew out. That's WDSU-TV. They're owned by Edgar Stern, and Edgar Stern's one of the core members of Alton Ochsner's INCA.
By the way, INCA stands for?
The Information Council for the Americas, which was basically, they recorded things like interviews with Cuban exiles and refugees about the horrors of losing their mattress factories and sugar plantations to Castro, and then sent these tapes out to other countries around Latin America to try to help them fight off communism. I don't know that any radio station in any other country ever played any of their stuff, but they had a list of about 125 radio stations that they sent things out to. But the point is, when they get Lee Harvey Oswald onto the radio station during a live broadcast, and the radio station again is owned by Edgar Stern from INCA, they get somebody to debate Oswald, who pulls a piece of paper out of his pocket and starts talking about his defection to the Soviet Union. Well, this person that does this is the executive director of INCA. He's the only employee INCA has. So he's really the mouthpiece for Alton Ochsner in the first place. And then they take this half-hour radio interview and they make a phonographic record out of it, and using money from a industrialist from California by the name of Farley, they send it to 300 radio and TV stations all across the country. But before they do that, they run over to Hale Boggs, who's about to be appointed to the Warren Commission, and they play the tape for him so that Boggs can hear that Oswald said, "Yes, I am a Marxist." Okay, and then Boggs picks up the telephone and calls Lyndon Johnson and tells him that he's just heard that, you know, this boy Oswald's a communist. And then, after knowing what Boggs' position is on this thing, LBJ turns around and puts Boggs on the Warren Commission. So, and all this is the activity that's being coordinated by Dr. Ochsner down in New Orleans. So this is an awfully, it's deep politics, guys. I mean, this is national power, people who are in a position to influence who's in the White House, people are capable of influencing what the National Women Institute of Health does, et cetera. Now, the real connection between Ochsner and these other activities involving the vaccines
right.
is that Ochsner was very much involved with the drug companies and was very pro the polio vaccine. I'm talking about the Salk vaccine, the first one that came out. And there were a lot of debates about this. And in fact, one of the women that I talk about a lot in my book is Bernice Eddy. She safety tested vaccines for the NIH, and she flunked the Salk vaccine. She found it paralyzed and killed her monkeys and told NIH not to release it. And there, a big debate erupted about whether, a private debate in the corridors of power about whether to do this. And Alton Ochsner said, this thing is safe. I will prove it to you. I will give it to my grandchildren. And he did. And he gave this polio vaccine to his grandchildren. And he killed his grandson and crippled his granddaughter by doing it. So he had a very strong personal connection to the whole development of the polio vaccine. And so when they needed somebody to try to run an underground laboratory in order to develop a vaccine to try to prevent this epidemic of cancer that they later found out looked like it was coming down the road, he was a very good choice.
Now, Alton Ochsner and Mary Sherman, the monkey viruses and the contamination of the polio vaccine, because we've been talking in the context of the contamination of vaccines, cancer research, and AIDS. And you speculated that, in fact, the work that Mary Sherman, who was closely associated with Alton Ochsner, again, we're setting the political milieu that's the context in which these events took place. You were speculating that the contamination, you have speculated, that the contamination of the polio vaccine and the work that Mary Sherman was doing with Alton Ochsner, possibly David Ferry, and possibly under the auspices of Guy Banner, was related to that.
Well, I definitely think the work that Mary Sherman was doing was connected with Alton Ochsner and was connected to the contamination of the polio vaccine, and I do think that their objective was trying to develop a vaccine to prevent the epidemic of cancer that we have today. Now, with having just said that, you can't do that type of stuff using a linear particle accelerator in secret, using secret government money without some oversight from somebody. And that oversight came from the U.S. military. And we have identified actual people that had no business being in New Orleans that were military bioweapons people that happened to show up in New Orleans right when this laboratory was getting started. And I think one of my big concerns about this whole thing is, regardless of how noble the objectives were for starting this thing, once the work got started, there were people standing around looking over their shoulders and say, we can use that as a weapon.
There are so many things with regard to each of these gentlemen's works that we could talk about, and unfortunately time is not going to await any of us. What I'd like to do here perhaps is to throw out some institutions and points of commonality and let each of you comment or involve yourselves in the discussion as you see fit on some of these subjects. Now, we were talking about the Special Cancer Virus Research Program and Fort Detrick. We should note that Fort Detrick was taken over by Litton Bionetics and was run for the National Cancer Institute. And, of course, Lynn Horowitz has already talked about the name Robert Gallo, and there are a couple of other people who we should mention in connection with that, and those are, again, Jack Gruber and Alfred Hellman, who maintained the cell culture laboratory for the Special Viral Cancer Research Program. It was maintained, interestingly enough, at the Naval Biosciences Laboratory right here in Oakland, California, a military facility. And Jack Gruber and Alfred Hellman were longtime veterans of Fort Detrick. Ed, in New Orleans, there's a very important monkey research facility called the Delta Primate Center. Is that correct?
Yes, that is.
And there's an interesting fellow who showed up there about 1971 with a background similar to Gruber and Hellman.
Yeah, the Delta Regional Primate Center is technically owned by the United States government, in particular by the National Institute of Health, but it is managed by Tulane University, with the understanding that about half of the work that goes on in there will be done by LSU. So it's a joint management program. And the history of that thing goes back into psychological research. But the guy that came down in 1973 was Peter Girone. And his whole background was on basically the aerosol contamination of cancer-causing viruses for the U.S. military. And he was deeply involved in all these retrovirus research. And in fact, one of the things that came up earlier, you start talking about the nuclear stuff, the Defense Nuclear Agency, one of the meetings that we have evidence that he was at was with the Defense Nuclear Agency talking about the hazards of biologically contaminated simians and what dangers they pose and how you contain them from a quarantine point of view and then how you deal with emergencies and stuff. So this whole situation of Tulane, the monkey virus research in Tulane did not start by any means in 1964 when they built the Regional Primate Center, and it did not start in 1973 with Peter Girone. It goes back way before that. And they were also doing a lot of other neurological research down there with CIA money about mind control and stuff, which is, I don't want to get too far off in that direction. But this whole thing of monkey virus research, I mean, we're talking about there's 40, 50 years of research going on here in the United States with people messing around with the genetic structures of these things. I don't think it's remarkable, once you understand that history, that we happen to have a new global epidemic caused by mutated monkey virus, if in fact that's what it's even caused by.
Doctors Horowitz and Cantwell, the hepatitis B vaccine and Merck Sharp and Dohme.
Well, okay. You wanted to talk about Dr. Shmunis. I think this is a very strange story, kind of like Harvey Oswald. Here you had basically a Polish a Jew who was a medical student in Poland when the Nazis invaded, partitioned Poland. His family in the western part of Poland were all exterminated in the Holocaust. He was taken to Siberia by the Russians. After the war, apparently during his imprisonment, he was beaten and told things by the KGB that, you know, you will do what you're told, and if you don't, we will find you, blah, blah, blah. This is the story that has been incorporated in some of the medical journals. After the war, he married a Russian woman, finished medical school in Tomsk in central Russia. In the early 50s, they allowed him to go back to Poland. He had an interest in hepatitis after his wife, Maya, developed hepatitis. He became an epidemiologist. During his tour of duty on a rest period, he happened to end up at one of those rest programs, and his roommate happened to end up being a Polish priest who eventually became the current Pope John Paul. There are conflicting stories as to how he ended up in America. One story is that he was at a meeting in Italy and he defected with his wife and child to America. The other story is that there was an anti-Semitic purge in the 60s in Poland, and he was persecuted and he was allowed out. At any rate, he came to New York with his family, penniless, the story is, with $15 in his pocket. He went to the library at, I believe, Cornell. Somebody called his name over a loudspeaker. He got a job as a lab assistant at the New York City Blood Center. Within a few years, he was named a chief of the Blood Center and continued his hepatitis studies. He rapidly became professor of epidemiology at Columbia University. In the mid-70s, he was invited back to Moscow to give a speech. He was scared to death to go back to Moscow. You can imagine why. But through contacts at the State Department, he was allowed back. He gave his lecture. They heralded him. He went back. and proceeded to get ready for the greatest experiment of his life, which was the hepatitis B vaccine trial, which turned out to be tremendously successful. It was like 96% successful in supposedly immunizing promiscuous gay men against hepatitis B. And the following year, he conveniently died of lung cancer. There's very, very little written about him. I mean, in terms of if you would think somebody of that stature would die, there would be some kind of article about his life, but there has been very, very little written. In one of my later books, Queer Blood, I just like to talk, even though this man has sort of been eradicated from the medical annals, I suppose the government does not want anybody really remembering the hepatitis B trial, especially with people like myself and Len talking about the distinct possibility this was the introduction of the AIDS virus into the gay community. But at any rate, I wrote in my book, Queer Blood, a couple of paragraphs that I'd like to read because I think it brings together some of this Twilight Zone stuff that we are talking about. I wrote, although Smoonis' death received no fanfare, he was remembered and honored by a small coterie of distinguished scientists. The national and international medical power brokers who run medical science and who represent the media darlings. Those who paid tribute to Smoonis include the top government scientists in AIDS and cancer, the two discoverers of the AIDS virus, the most well-known researchers in animal experimentation, the heads of the most prestigious biomedical establishments in the nation, and the chief executives of drug companies tied to genetic engineering, vaccine production, and biological warfare research. On May 11, 1984, a landmark meeting took place in the nation's capital to honor Wolf Smoonis. One of the most distinguished attendees was Dr. Robert Gallo, who had announced the discovery of the AIDS virus 3 weeks earlier. Looking over the list of contributors and participants at this remarkable symposium sponsored by the American Red Cross, I wondered what had really brought all these powerful people together to pay homage to Wolf Smoonis. I had lived long enough to recognize the truth contained in the adage, "Birds of a feather do indeed flock together." There was a strange and ominous connection between cancer and AIDS, between animal experimentation and genetic engineering of viruses, between biologic warfare technology and drug companies, between gay experiments and AIDS, between vaccine programs and the contamination of the nation's blood supply. Why else would all these people from diverse areas of science be attending this high-level conference? And of course, despite the denial of the medical authorities regarding the AIDS association with the vaccine, there was a connection between Smoonis' gay experiment and the outbreak of AIDS in American cities. It was not my imagination, and it wasn't a coincidence. The more I studied the hepatitis B experiment, the more the connections to biological warfare and genocide became apparent.
I want to get into some of the connections of American company and the vaccine. One of the points that I wanted to make about Smoonis, and something you point out in your book, AIDS and the Doctors of Death, and as far removed and as crazy as it might seem to some people to talk about Wolf Smoonis and Lee Harvey Oswald in the same breath, I think there's some very important similarities in the way the two, perhaps to use a biological metaphor, were able to cross the very formidable Iron Curtain as though it were sort of a semi-permeable cell membrane. The suggestions with both people, and again, I'm telescoping in the interest of time, is that both probably had connections to intelligence services. Lee Harvey Oswald was officially a communist. Ed and Inca helped to portray Lee Harvey Oswald as a communist. The spin on Wolf Smoonis has been as a refugee of Soviet oppression, which he may very well have been. He also spent much of his formative years, including some of his medical training, though, as a Jew surviving in Nazi-occupied Poland, which was no mean feat. He was a roommate of Karol Wojtyla, who, again, making a very long story very short, is an individual with known intelligence connections, an individual who participated in the closing phase of the Cold War with our intelligence services close to the P2, the fascist P2 lodge in Italy, close to the Opus Dei Lay Vatican Order, which helped elevate his rise to the Vatican, that very close to Francisco Franco and its regime. And again, the Pope himself, a very interesting political animal. But the way that Shmunis was able to move with his whole family across the Iron Curtain and go from the Soviet Union right to the United States, where he immediately
went to the top.
He sort of experienced a genetic mutation that, in a professional sense, which elevated him right to the top of the field of medical research that he was in, is not unlike the way Lee Harvey Oswald, who had supposedly defected to the Soviet Union with top secret information about our radar nets and the U-2, then goes back to the United States, is never prosecuted, is then being handled by a milieu not unlike the milieu that we're looking at here, people like there are institutions like the Anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, INCA, the Anti-Communist League of the Caribbean, two of those three institutions affiliated with the World Anti-Communist League, appear in the background and also in the foreground of Lee Harvey Oswald, the supposed communist. So again, as weird as it might seem, I think Wolf Schmunes and Lee Harvey Oswald may very well be similar political animals in terms of their genesis. Now, going back again to the hepatitis B vaccine, that was administered by a very interesting company, Merck Sharp and Dohme. Len, if you could tell us about that company and also about a couple of institutions which figure in the Hep B research, the Hep B vaccine research, Saul Krugman, the New York University Medical Center, and Maurice Hilleman as well of Merck Sharp and Dohme.
Sure. Well, Merck Sharp and Dohme, first of all, the president of Merck was George W. Merck, who was America's biological weapons industry director, personally appointed by President Roosevelt after the Second World War. And what I was able to do is track the vaccine, the contaminated vaccine, to the monkeys that were shipped to Merck by Litton Bionetics, the biological weapons contractors that created numerous AIDS-like and Ebola-like viruses. And that what they did, what is actually Hilleman did, was he imported African green monkeys and other monkeys for cancer virus and vaccine research. And that what they, these researchers themselves, now when I say these researchers, I'm talking about Hilleman, and I'm talking about Guerin and Poitz and Purcell. All of these researchers had actually discussed at length the fact that they had a major biohazard and containment problem. All of their monkeys were contaminated, they said. For example, they said that 70% of their monkeys were contaminated with hepatitis B virus environmentally and a whole assortment of other viruses. So now it's interesting that they use these types of monkeys to grow, according to Robert Purcell at the National Institute for Allergies and Infectious Diseases, who had a major hand in the development of this most plausible vaccine that spread AIDS to the world. Purcell said that they actually grew the experimental hepatitis B virus at Merck Sharp and Dohme's facilities and New York University Medical Center facilities in New York, which is associated with the New York City Blood Bank. And we'll have to get into, make sure you remind me to get into the Rockefeller connections to this institution.
And by the way, we should note here, again, that Merck Company is one of the major names involved with the U.S. Biological Warfare Research Program. So this is the vaccine manufacturer we're talking about. New York University Medical Center is also a major recipient of biological warfare research contracts and is involved in this research.
Exactly. So that now they brought these monkeys in, they were contaminated, they then used these chimps and monkeys, to contaminated monkeys and chimps, to grow the hepatitis B virus, which they then inoculated into Willowbrook State School mentally retarded children on Staten Island in New York, and gay men in New York City, and blacks in Central Africa, to develop the different subtypes of the hepatitis B vaccine that they were going to be producing. Now, who was involved in this specifically was the Food and Drug Administration, the Merck Sharp and Dohme, the Centers for Disease Control, and the National Institute for Allergies and Infectious Diseases. Now, see if you can follow me on this. Once they had the monkey, the hepatitis B viruses grown in the chimps in now to the human subjects, they then thus infected the humans with these viruses. They then withdrew from these people the serum with which they made the experimental hepatitis B vaccine, which was subsequently administered to 200,000 human subjects simultaneously in New York City and Central Africa in 1974. And as Ed Haslam has already told you, the polio vaccine had been administered to these same people approximately 10 years earlier, and that alone contained SV40, the 40th simian monkey virus ever discovered. It had simian foamy retroviruses, which are RNA reverse transcriptase retroviruses, highly mutatable. It had herpes-type viruses, cytomegaloviruses, Epstein-Barr viruses. In other words, these individuals that they used to make this vaccine were themselves fully contaminated. This was an accident waiting to happen. They then recombined. All of these different viruses were literally recombining in these human subjects from which they made that experimental hepatitis B vaccine, which Dr. Cantwell has very clearly stated was absolutely associated with the outbreaks among the gay population in the United States, and most clearly, in my opinion, the blacks in Central Africa, too.
I want to get into some of the recombinant, or using human beings as sort of a, what was the term you used? A repository in which these various viruses could recombine. A couple of interesting names, though, Ed, sticking with the hepatitis B and also in the New York City area, because there's some other points I want to touch on. Maurice Hilleman, the top researcher for Merck Sharp and Dohme, also himself deeply involved with military research.
Yes, indeed.
Dave?
Yeah.
This is Ed. May I add a footnote to what Glenn was just talking about in Africa?
Sure, go ahead.
Because what they did in Africa, and there was a lot of crossover between Africa and the Caribbean, okay? But what they did there, then they followed with other doctors who went down there and bought blood from these people. And they took that blood from those third world people who they had been putting all these vaccines into. Then they flew it back to the United States and used it to make gamma globulin, which they then turned around and injected into the American population, mostly the homosexual population.
Right. And they, when you say they, it was specifically Lawrence Rockefeller, the New York City Blood Council, which was the council of doctors that Lawrence Rockefeller put together, which formed the New York City Blood Bank, and this was the International Blood Bankers. So the they has a name.
And let's talk about ground zero at blood banks for a minute. Everybody thinks about the Swiss Red Cross as ground zero. The person that brought blood typing to Switzerland, which made the blood banks possible, was Dr. Alton Ochsner.
Interesting.
Again, Maurice Hilleman, though, the top Hep B researcher for Merck Sharp and Dohme, is an individual who's working for the OSRC, a top Pentagon outfit.
Exactly. And what's absolutely incredible, in the last chapter of Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, it's called Smoking Guns and Conclusions. I was able to actually get a hold of a tape, an audio taped interview with Dr. Maurice Hilleman, the world's leading vaccine developer for both the military as well as Merck Sharp and Dohme, on tape at the National Library of Medicine is recorded. A interview with Dr. Hilleman, in which he says, in 1986, we brought the AIDS virus into North America in contaminated African greens. We didn't know it at the time, he said. And this was an interview by Edward Shorter, Harvard medical historian, and it was captured live on tape in Boston on WGBH radio. And actually, there was a film crew there, which was the Boston's premier public television broadcasting station, and they never aired it.
One thing, too, I wanted to touch on. Now, Alan, you cited in AIDS and the Doctors of Death some very compelling statistics that indicated that, once again, the hepatitis B vaccine was the cause of AIDS. In other words, that a lot of the people who participated in this turned up with AIDS. I want you to touch on that point. And then, Lynn, as this information that Alan is discussing began to come to light, a very interesting study by the aforementioned Dr. Poitz came out saying, oh, this is just a bunch of nonsense. Dr. Poitz turned out to be a very interesting individual, not at all an objective observer in the phenomena we're talking about. First Dr. Cantwell, then Dr. Horowitz.
Well, the gay men that were part of the experiment had to deposit blood every 3 months, 6 months, what have you. And it was interesting because Dr. Shmunis said at the end of the experiment, when they wanted to dump all this blood that they had, he said, don't
dump this blood because there may be diseases coming down the line, and we may need this blood, so that all the blood that was deposited by gay men in this experiment was retained by the New York City Blood Center. Now, in 1985, when a test was devised to test for HIV, they naturally then went back to determine whether those blood tests, when and when those blood tests became positive for HIV. Through the, a lot of blood testing, they came to the conclusion that HIV had to be introduced into the American blood supply somewhere around 1978-1979. Now, the interesting thing to me, a tremendous statistic, you know, which to me is very, very strong evidence that the hepatitis B vaccine trial is intimately associated with the introduction of HIV into the gay community, was that in the blood from 1980. Now, that means that 1 year prior to even discovering the AIDS epidemic, which was discovered in June of 1981, in 1980, 20% of the men who had volunteered for that experiment, 20% of the men were already positive for HIV, which indicates to me that they had the highest percentage of HIV infection of any population on the planet, and that includes any African population. Also interesting that I think some of your listeners will remember that that tale out of Randy Schultz's book, The Band Played On, which came out in 1987, where he talked about Patient Zero, the Canadian airline a pilot that flew in from Paris and was terribly promiscuous and spread AIDS all over America.
Well, by the way, for people who have not read the book, this supposedly was a lone nut who spread AIDS all throughout.
Exactly.
I've termed him on my program in the past Lee Harvey AIDS.
Yes, so. Well, it's a good term. But what happened is the media, you know, picked up on this. Of course, by that time, the man was long dead. His name was Gaetan Dugas. But interestingly, and of course, I could never understand how the government had the time to follow this man around, checking on all the people that he was sleeping with in 1980. And around that time, before AIDS was even known. But at any rate, it was interesting because when he was diagnosed in 1980 as one of the first AIDS cases, as I just said, 20% of the men in the hepatitis B vaccine experiment were already infected. So we can hardly blame, you know, this poor little Canadian airline pilot, you know, for introducing HIV into the gay population.
Now,
of course, one of the things you'd really want to know is how many men from that experiment have died of AIDS, and you will never get that information, ever. It would be the first thing as a researcher that you would want to know. How many men die? It will never give you that information.
Now, when information of the type that you develop in your books began to come to light, pointing to the Hep B vaccine as the source of AIDS, a study came out by Dr. Poitz, which was badly skewered, indicating the opposite, and he has a very interesting involvement with these activities, Len.
Yes, absolutely. There's connections to Abbott Labs, which was the developers of the illicit test and the blood screening tests that was used early on in the New York City Blood Bank. What's absolutely most amazing and so obviously a distortion of scientific method was that when the suspicions about the hepatitis B came forward and these alleged government top scientists were assigned to investigate these allegations scientifically, they neglected to study the New York group. It's astonishing that the group of people that specifically got this vaccine that's most implicated as having been the first people on the planet Earth to get the AIDS virus through the hepatitis B vaccine, they neglected to study them at all. They studied people, gay men, from Denver, Colorado. They studied a few from San Francisco. But all the New York men, they completely omitted. And that's exactly what Dr. Cantwell has just said. They will never give you the seroprevalence rates of these individuals or the death rates of these individuals.
And in 1 second, I want to talk about Dr. Poitz.